Welcome to this episode of Reading with Rasta. Today we will be reading Prophet's Debt by Robert Creekmore. Chapter 1. More than 100 folded pieces of notebook paper lie in the bottom of the desk drawer in my small bedroom. Each holds poetry that was written for me by my best friend, Tiffany Bullock. The calendar posted over the desk has a giant red circle around today's date, Thursday, August 12th, 1993. Encompassed by that red circle are the words, "Perseid meteor shower." It peaks tonight. Tiffany isn't just my best friend, she is my only friend. My name is Naomi Pace. At 14, I'm already 5'10". This fact is something my classmates will not let me forget. They're also not too keen on me being what my mom calls a, quote, tomboy. I cut my blonde hair as short as my mother will allow, which is roughly chin length. I have no interest in wearing makeup or dresses. I like wearing oversized overalls. They let me hide my body from the world. What I am interested in is nature. I spend a lot of time after school and on the weekends catching any critter that moves and will fit in my half-gallon mason jar. Usually, Tiffany is somewhere nearby while I turn over rocks or run a net through Stony Creek. I think I want to be a biologist. Tiffany says she wants to be a writer, and that she does in earnest. I have received an average of one poem a day for the last 6 months. Even when she follows me into the woods, Tiffany has a book, notepad, and pen. She's even gotten pretty good at drawing some of the creatures that fall prey to my curiosity. These temporary prisoners are eventually set free, back to whatever life they were leading before their harrowing abduction. We live in a small town named Rocky Mount. Despite the name, there are no mountains to be found. Rather, it's nestled in the northern coastal plains of North Carolina. Essentially, we live in a swamp, which suits me fine. I'm still looking for my first alligator. Tiffany and I have few places of refuge. One of them is the old Braswell Library downtown. It smells of old paper and ink. If I had synesthesia, I'd pair the olfactory sensation to intrigue and rare knowledge. Tiffany dedicates her time to literary fiction, and I to whatever biology texts I rummage up. I spend countless hours looking through scientific illustrations, attempting to identify my most recent hostage from the animal kingdom. The head librarian says she doesn't care as long as the jar stays closed. Tiffany sleeps over most weekends. I assume it's to escape her mother for a while. Her mom isn't a bad person, but she's a lousy parent. This summer, though, she has slept over almost every night. During the day, she walks the half-mile trek through our neighborhood to check in with her mom. Tiffany doesn't know her father. He abandoned his family directly after she was born. Perhaps that's lucky? My father isn't someone I'd choose to spend time around if I had the choice. I'm an only child. Tiffany has an older sister named Leslie. Leslie is 16 and just purchased her first car, a white, four-door 1986 Toyota Corolla. Tiffany is at home right now, making sure Leslie will come through and give us a ride to the city lake later tonight, which is where we intend to view the meteor shower. We wanted to go further out of town, but Leslie only agreed to take us to the lake because she's going the same way. The city lake is circled by a small road. It's one end of a strip teenager's cruise. The other end is a shopping center about 2 miles away. They drive in loops for hours, rarely doing more than just looking at each other. Luckily, there is a small, dimly lit island on the lake that is accessible by a bridge and is mostly well-maintained grass. I hear the back door open. Tiffany doesn't knock or use a key. The door isn't locked anyway.
I can tell it's her by light footsteps. My father's resound of heavy boots and my mom's shoes almost always make a clicking sound on the parquet kitchen floor.
Tiffany is only about 5'2 and usually wears a pair of black Chuck Taylors, lest the light footfall. But if we're talking about looks, the most striking thing about Tiffany is her bright red hair and pale freckled skin. Her eyes are a light blue, mine are green. "What did she say?" I ask. "She was nice about it, but yeah, she'll pick us up at 8. At least you don't have to be stuck with her in the little car for long." Tiffany looks at her feet as though she feels embarrassed about how her sister yells and berates her. I don't make mention of it now because it would make Tiff upset. Instead, I deflect to a pleasant idea. "How about we go to the creek?" "Okay," Tiffany says softly.
Stony Creek is only about a half block from my house and through a neighbor's yard. Tiffin and I have a usual spot. It's an outcrop of large rocks left over from a long-ago eroded mountain range. She always sits on the big one, closest to shore, while I traipse out, tiptoeing over the small boulders with a fishing pole. I fish the next 3 hours away using a light spin caster baited with a white beetle spin. I catch 11 bream and 2 largemouth bass. I examine each one closely, lower them gently into the water to allow their gills to aerate, then release them. Tiffany reads quietly. I can tell whatever Leslie said to her was being digested by her mind, and the way she up glass is by intestines. Around 7:30, Tiffany looks up from a book and says, "We need to go back to the house. Leslie will be there in 30 minutes. Her tone is still sad. "I'd like to slap your sister sometimes," I say. "Don't. If she talks to you like that in front of me, I will. Leslie never does. She's afraid of you, I think." "She should be," I respond angrily. I've known Tiff since the first grade. She's always been smaller, and I've always been protective. Leslie somehow blames Tiffany for their father's disappearance. Tiffany, in her typical fashion, doesn't talk about it, but I can almost see the shards of self-hatred piercing out of her skull. We put together a backpack with 2 blankets, a canteen of water, a bag of chips, a star map, and a flashlight. We hear a horn honk outside. A flash of anguish goes across Tiffany's face. "Yep, that's her," she says. I sling the backpack over my left shoulder as we make our way to the back door. I don't bother to lock it. I sit in the front passenger seat because I'm the tallest, and Tiffany sits behind Leslie so that she can have the legroom not taken up by her equally short sister. Without a word, Leslie backs quickly down the short gravel driveway. She cranks the radio up. It's "Runaway Train" by Soul Asylum. The volume makes it impossible to talk, which is the point. My house is right off Sunset Road, the cruising drag. The neighborhood is mostly made up of small brick ranch houses with yards shaded by dense pines. It takes less than 10 minutes to get to the lake. As our destination comes into view, "Why Go" by Pearl Jam blasts forth at an unbearable volume. Leslie turns onto the drive encircling the lake. She stops in the road directly across from the bridge and we get out. "At least she gave us a ride," I say, as the music from Leslie's car fades into the distance. "Sorry. Stop apologizing for her. She hates me, that's all. I don't even understand why," Tiffany says. "It's like Leslie hates the idea of you because she doesn't truly know you. I do." Tiffany goes quiet again. I see a tear slowly trickle across her freckled cheek. "Has she hit you?" I ask. "Not in a couple years. Mostly she ignores me. I suppose I should be satisfied with that." Tiff feigns a heart-wrenching smile. I know not to push the subject further, though I wish she'd talk about it more instead of keeping the pain locked away in her heart. We walk across a short arched bridge to the round man-made island. It's made of treated wood and has white handrails. There's a white gazebo off to the left, and luckily, not another soul. Hopefully it will remain our private island tonight. Most of the older teenagers are 200 yards away in a dimly lit parking lot showing off their large pickups and IROC Camaros. They don't even realize how special tonight is, astronomically. I plop my bag down near the bridge, the edge of the island, furthest from the bridge. I pull out one blanket and lay it on the ground. I sit on the blanket and pull out the other blanket. Tiff sits on my right. We unfurl the second blanket and lay it atop ourselves. The ground is soft, the air is still, and the sky is clear. Perfect. The only hitch is the light emanating from distant parking lots. As we lay there, I ask, "How many stars do you think there are?" "There are as many or as few as you wish." "How?" "The universe is infinite. It's up to your discretion how you want to handle such a staggering concept. The manner in which you perceive it won't change its unknowable nature." We go quiet as the first white streaks burn through our atmosphere. We watch as they come in all directions, the larger ones burn green. "The green color is due to the copper content," Tiff tells me. I already knew, but I don't tell her. "Do you think each one of these stars has a planet with life?" Tiff asks. "I don't know." She turns her head towards me and says, "Of course, there's life beyond Earth." "How can you be so sure? Existence is so big, it can't just be us." I lie quiet in thought for a moment before replying, "It doesn't matter. We are so small." "That's how you choose to see it, Naomi. Just because I love you doesn't mean we always have to agree." "But if there's not an ultimate answer, what's the point?" "This. Tiff replies while slipping her trembling left hand into my right. She hesitates. I reach my free hand over and gently pull her face towards mine. As our lips touched, I am transported, no longer aware of anything but her. I kissed a neighbor boy the summer before. He was sweet, but it felt odd and fake. Later that year, when my mind turned to kissing him, I felt repulsed. As I gave thought to how much physical affection would be expected of me by boys, I became terrified. I don't want their physical advances. I would never be in love with a boy, nor do I want to try. Tiffany and I often express our love. I always assumed I loved her as my best friend, but now there is a new, exciting dimension that I never expected. I'm in love, and it has manifested itself into a physical desire I was previously unaware existed. We continue to hold hands and kiss. We wrap our arms around each other and pull ourselves as closely as physics will allow. I want to disintegrate together, combine our atoms, drift into oblivion, and experience the infinite joy of our togetherness. We stay intertwined longer than either of us realize. Tiffany! I hear a shriek across the placid water. It is Leslie. What are you, some kind of lesbos? I can feel Tiff's hands begin to shake, but not like before. This time it is pure terror. We both pop up and whip our heads and torsos around, simultaneously see her no more than 5 yards behind us. Leslie looks like a portrait of her mother, if it were painted by some unaccomplished artist. Both are short, have blonde hair, blue eyes. Leslie has bangs cut into her blonde hair that she felt the need to poof up with hairspray and a blow dryer. Despite how ridiculous she looks, her sudden materialization creates a slow, heavy feeling in my bowels. My brain, charged up on adrenaline, makes everything appear slower. To me, she is no different than encountering a large bear at the same distance. My frontal lobe then tells me a story in pictures of what will happen. It involves my father, Amos Pace, who is a giant of a man. 6'4", with broad shoulders, brown hair, brown eyes, a thick furrowed brow, and rough, meaty hands. I felt the low thud of either of those hands across my face and body more than I can remember. Next comes to mind my mother, who is secretary for our church, First Baptist. I can see the lines coming out on her forehead when she confronts me. She's not much shorter than me, so I notice them when she's angry because they're at eye level. She has dirty blonde hair and green eyes. She usually dresses conservatively, but sharply. The church is her life. If it got out that her daughter went around town kissing other girls, she'd be ruined. This would be handled discreetly and internally. She isn't much for striking me, but never gets in the way of my father when he does. Leslie starts walking towards us fast and with intent. She doesn't speak, just breathes heavily, frowning, with her nose pointed upward. She looks like someone who has smelt something putrid. Get up right now, she screams while grabbing Tiffany by her left arm. As her arm is pulled out from under her, Tiffany's face slams into the ground. Leslie begins to drag Tiffany face down towards the bridge. Tiffany screams, "You're hurting me!" in response. Hearing her scream in pain ignites something primal inside me. It is the instinct to protect someone's mate at all costs. I hop to my feet and grab a hold of Leslie's left wrist with both hands. Leslie looks at me in disbelief. Before she can yell at me, I twist as hard as I can. Leslie grunts from pain but won't let go. I keep my left hand on her wrist and slide right underneath Leslie's elbow and extend her arm straight. Leslie stops pulling due to the pain caused as I turn her wrist one way and elbow the other. As she looks up, her eyes meet mine. I see the doubt she has in her physical abilities take hold as she realizes just how much larger than her I am, despite my younger age. If you don't let her go, I will break your arm, I growl in her face. She immediately releases Tiffany's left wrist, leaving her face down in the grass. Tiffany looks up just in time to see me break Leslie's arm anyway. And that was chapter 1 of Prophet's Debt by Robert Creekwood.